From the Land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 20th day of January 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. Andre Cizoff will join us from Sove Econ. He's in Spain today, but we'll discuss the wheat market with us and the Ukraine-Russia conflict that's happening now, especially as it relates to the United States and some comments President Biden made yesterday. Then as we close out our time together, we'll take up the weather forecast with Mike Tenura at T-Storm Weather in Chicago, all on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, March corn today settled at $6.11. That was up a half cent. The May contract down a quarter at 6.10¾, and December futures at 5.62¼, 2½ lower. March soybeans 34½ higher, $14.25¾ the settlement price. May at 14.34½, up 33¾, and November beans at $13.20¼, 15¾ of a cent higher. The bean meal up 2½ at $400.80 a ton. The bean oil at $62.88, $2.12 higher. Wheat futures were down 6¼ at $7.90¼ in the lead March for the soft red. The hard red at $7.96½, down 3½ cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished at $143.17½. That's 17½ cents lower. Feeders at $164.95, down 67½ cents, and lean hogs at $94 even, at $2.65 higher per 100 pounds for the lean hogs in the April contract. Crude oil at $85.55 a barrel, down around 24 cents. Diesel fuel, 0.8 cents lower at $2.62⁷ of a cent per gallon. And the gasoline on the RBOB at $2.46⁄6, just about 0.5 cents lower for the day. Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net now joins us to discuss what's been happening in Chicago. Though, Matt, I think you've been awful busy this week. I'm not sure you've been able to pay all that much attention to Chicago. I know better than that. Where have you been traveling to?
Farm futures this week spoke on the business summit, which is the first day there on Wednesday. But I also had a couple of farm credit meetings this week, Tuesday in Springfield, Thursday in St. Louis. Problem was, I had to go back to farm futures for a keynote presentation on Friday. That's where I'm headed right now, is back up to Coralville, Iowa. So I'm just super thrilled that the weather's a little better than what it was this time last week, because I got to drive through that last week on the way home from market to market.
Yeah, well, you've been busy, and I know you've been getting asked a lot of questions. Which question is asked more often than not by producers?
I think the biggest question is, you know, how aggressive do I want to be on my 22 crop? Okay, so, you know, whenever you look at 21, obviously we all know what we raised. We all know what those costs were. You know, it's kind of a thing where how much do you want to gamble from this point forward? Whenever it comes to old crop, you know, how are you going to go about it? As far as new crop goes, there's so many unknowns, so many variables. It's very much a catered program as well, because, you know, if you're a producer who actually bought the fertilizer on a prepay basis, it's a completely different conversation than a producer who has to pay spot price for all their fertilizer. So I definitely want to highlight that, but definitely a lot of folks trying to figure out just how much of this risk do I quantify. Yes, we're looking at profitable levels. I mean, these beans have raised out of control the last couple of days, and I think it's got more to do with inflation than what it does South American weather, because the South American situation improved a little bit over the weekend, and I think, yes, there's a big question mark as to how much damage was done, but at the same time, it certainly is not getting worse right now. So to see the market up 30 2 days in a row, that's quite the move.
It is a big move. Should producers be wary of making additional sales for 2022, given the inflation you're looking at or thinking that might be playing into the marketplace?
That all depends on where they're currently at. You know, if they're in a situation where they don't have much flexibility, then yes, I understand that, if they've sold 30 or 40% of corn or beans, that they may not want to sell much more. We've been telling producers all along, though, with your marketing plan, stay quite flexible to where some of your sales actually you'd be able to participate if the market went ahead and rallied. And so I know people roll their eyes when they hear that. They think it's just a, you know, a strategy that people are promoting to try to get business going, but it's actually a really good way for a producer to lock in a worst case scenario and still participate if the market takes off and goes higher. And we all know that we've done just exactly that. Heck, Todd, we had guys and gals that bought February options for the January report because they were going to be expiring 10 days after, you know, the January report was released. And quite frankly, some people got out of those right after the report because we didn't get this big wild swing, you know, whereas other people said, you know, I think I'm going to keep those things in place. And who knows what this market might do. And I don't think anybody would have ever guessed in a million years that here on Thursday afternoon, we settled 80 cents off of Tuesday's lows. I mean, 80 cents. And so that's just an incredible move. And there's been pretty good reward, yeah, I think, for some people that have been willing to step in and try to manage risk on aspects of their operation.
You mentioned that you thought that this was more inflationary talk than it was actual problems that are occurring in South America, given the rainfall that Argentina has had. Is there concern on your part about Paraguay, parts of southern Brazil that are still under heat warnings?
Yes, there's definitely still concern. And that's what I'm saying is that, you know, there's no way of knowing just how much damage has been done just yet. It's such an expanse of different areas of production that really hard to get a good grasp on just how much production might be impacted. But what we do know, you know, is that it's been impacted. And so moving forward as a producer, though, right here in the U.S., you've had quite the rally on your 21 and especially 22 soybean and corn crops, especially soybeans lately. This rally, Todd, has nothing to do with anything any of us has done. It's on the other side of the hemisphere, you know, or inflation, one of the two. And so it's a gift that all of us have been able to at least take a look at the way these prices have rallied. Now, typically the way that I've always understood gifts to work is that they don't do you much good if you don't accept the gift. And so we've at least got to be willing to accept some of this, take a little bit of this risk off the table, because if we can't make money at $13 plus beans for this next fall, you know, I think that we've got bigger problems going on.
Are you concerned that corn was unable to rally along with soybeans today?
I'll tell you what, that was interesting. I don't know. Yeah, maybe a little concerned, but quite frankly, I think the funds were stepping in and buying the daylights out of soybeans. And I think, you know, it was one of those deals where today wasn't the day to buy corn, but by all means, it was a strange situation to see, you know, corn down 2 to 4 cents and beans up 32. That's not something we see very often at all. And so, you know, is it super concerning for the long run? No, it's not. I mean, you're still looking at a 10% stocks to use on corn. You're still looking at the need to get really strong acreage. And anytime you see November beans up 15 cents on the day and corn not doing much of anything, that tells me that sooner or later, this corn market is going to respond, and it's probably going to respond swiftly, because bottom line is you're still going to need really good corn acreage, especially if we have any damage whatsoever to that safrinha crop in the next few months.
And finally, because you've been talking in front of producers and to producers, have you gotten a feel for what they in Iowa, Illinois, parts of Missouri will be doing with acreage this year? Are they going to change much?
You know, I think in Illinois and Iowa and Indiana, I think a lot of the same rotations will be in place. You know, the thing for me is that if you did not get your anhydrous on and didn't get all your fertilizer on, I think anhydrous would be the one that people didn't get on the most of everything that we're talking about. In that particular instance, as long as you've got a really solid APH, I can see still wanting to stay fairly heavy corn. But if you don't, I'll tell you, Todd, you're putting $1,000 an acre probably, you know, into a crop. And in that particular situation, you better have a really good APH, because, you know, if you end up having big issues as far as production's concerned, that could be a really tough row to hoe. So I do think that I states will probably maintain a lot of corn acres, but the fringe states is where I think you're really going to lose a few. First of all, second of all, less so, probably some corn on corn acres will go to soybeans. So it'll be very interesting, but I don't think that we'll get close to 93 like we had last year.
Hey, thank you so much, and safe travels.
Absolutely. Thanks, Todd.
That's Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net. The role of commodity futures trade in Chicago is to try to accurately predict the ebb and flow of trade across the planet as it reflects supply, demand, geopolitical issues, and many other items. One of the things that has been in the news as of late, in fact, yesterday, has been the Russia-Ukraine conflict and whether or not President Vladimir Putin is likely to invade Ukraine. President Joe Biden was asked that question during a press conference yesterday, and here's his answer.
My guess is he will move in. He has to do something. And by the way, I've indicated to him the two things he said to me that he wants guarantees on. One is Ukraine will never be part of NATO, and two, that NATO or there will not be strategic weapons stationed in Ukraine. Well, we can work out something on the second piece, pretending what he does along the Russian line as well, the Russian border in the European area of Russia.
The president was explaining some of the geopolitical policy dance that is taking place right now as it relates to Ukraine and Russia. Ukraine and Russia also happen to be wheat exporters into the world marketplace. And in Chicago, traders have been taking notice for several days, and the price of wheat has rallied, or at least it did, and it may continue to do so. The extent of this rally over a couple of days this week surprised the managing director of Sove Econ. That's a group that studies the movement of grain and oilseeds out of the Black Sea region. Andrei Sisov is that managing director, and he joined me earlier this morning by Skype to talk about how he sees this particular event, the Ukraine-Russia conflict, playing into the world marketplace.
What we saw just recently, recent 2 days, when, you know, there were many headlines, negative headlines about Russia, what's happening with all ruble assets, about the huge sell-off in the Russian stocks market, and everything denominated in rubles. And that's why I think it were funds who started to pay attention, and they were massively short. And I think it was kind of panic short covering, which we saw. In reality, and back to your question, in reality, right now, things haven't changed. Tensions continue to get bigger, but there are no disruptions of grain flows, neither from Russia nor from Ukraine. I think the chance of any open military conflict remains low, fortunately. I would also say probably there is some indicators that things could settle, come down a little bit. And I guess an important event will be held on January 21st, when the US and Russia will meet again offline in Geneva. I think things and that short covering could be over. And I think, I hope and think that things will start to come down during next few weeks. However, there is a lot of armed men around and tensions are high. And potentially there is still a chance that something could get out of control and could see an open conflict. And that would cause a spike, even bigger spike in prices, first of all, wheat and then also probably corn, because market will be concerned that we could see some disruptions of grain flows out of the region. However, I do believe that probability of such big conflict that would lead to actual disruption is very, very low. So to put that into perspective, we need something bigger to compare to what happened in 2014 when Russia seized Crimea. I mean, it should be something bigger because during Crimean story and after that, the market was concerned indeed. But in reality, we haven't seen any disruptions of wheat and corn flows out of the region. So there was just some temporary delays, but it wasn't a game changer in reality.
Would you expect then the premium that has been built into the market to dissipate quickly or to disappear very quickly?
I think it will disappear, but I doubt that it will happen quickly. So we have those talks this week. Potentially, President Biden yesterday said that he could meet with Putin personally later this year. But it's not like, I seriously doubt that this story would be over next week. So I think this could last for at least a few months, and probably that's a very optimistic estimate. So that premium, which is there definitely currently, it's likely to go down, but not fast. I think it could take weeks at least. Probably if you're owning wheat or you're short wheat, whatever, probably you should watch what will happen this week, all those meetings, all those statements, and a practical indicator, you should watch what Russian troops are doing. If we see Russia really pulling its troops, or at least a substantial share of its troops from its western borders, I think that's definitely the sign that things indeed are coming down. While the troops are there, while we see new drills are being announced, so it implies that premium should stay.
Andrei Sizov is the managing director of SovEcon. You can learn more from him online if you'd like. The website there is fairly simple to get to. It's Sizov, Sizov, .report. Or you can simply visit our website at willag.org. There is a special edition of Commodity Week there posted through my Twitter account with more from him. We'll also hear more from Andrei Sizov on the closing market report tomorrow and Monday, right here on Illinois Public Media. Let's check the weather forecast now with Mike Tenor. You can find him at tstorm.net. He's with T-Storm Weather. Thanks so much, Mike, for being with us. Let's get right into this, because the weather has been really important in South America. There's been some rainfall in Argentina. Can you give me your assessment?
Well, they need a lot more rain than what they've seen this week. We saw around 1 to 2 inches in some of the key areas over the last several days. And even though that is a lot of rain for their standards and for U.S. standards, it's been so dry to this point in the growing season, we still need a lot more. The way it looks at the moment, a lot more is on the way over the next 3 to 4 days. We have heat that's located up to the north of Argentina, and we have coolness off to the south. That's setting up a transition zone right across the heart of the growing belt, and we'll see wave after wave after wave of thunderstorms through Monday or Tuesday. So we're looking for some pretty major totals. 2 to 5 inches of rain is fairly likely over the next 4 to 5 days. And that is pretty close to a month's worth of rain, because normal rainfall is close to 5 inches for January. So things are certainly going to be improving in Argentina. The only uncertainty, Todd, is how much do we really need to get out of the situation, and how much damage was there prior to the rains that are coming up?
Do you have an assessment of that?
Well, it's a tricky question to answer. The only thing we know is that it was unusually hot last week, with extreme heat by all measures. Record high temperatures were set on many days across the Argentina growing belt, with high temperatures in the mid-100s, even exceeding 110 degrees in a few locations. And we saw lows in the mid-70s to upper 80s. So this is the type of heat wave that you just don't see very often, probably fairly similar to what we saw in the U.S. back in 1995. So there was damage from that for sure, and it was very dry leading into the period that we're still in now. You need to keep in mind that even though we did see 1 to 2 inches up until this point this week, that was pretty much all that we've seen over the past 4 to 6 weeks. So the situation certainly is not great, and it will be stabilizing from the rains that are coming up, but we'll need to see more in February and March We'll also need to hope that we didn't have too much damage at this point in the growing season so that these rains can still make a big difference.
You mentioned as we started the hot air in the northern parts of Argentina. Is that still in Paraguay and southern Brazil? Those would both be some primary growing regions.
Well, they certainly are, and they're certainly involved in all of the heat. If you look at typical soybean production in Paraguay, Rio Grande do Sul, and Paraná, that region there produces around 50 to 60 million metric tons of soybeans every year. So that's more than they produce in Argentina. And that area is still in the middle of a severe heat wave. And not only that, even if we were to receive 5 inches of rain through the end of the month in Paraguay and Paraná, which is very unlikely, even if we saw that 5 inches of rain, it would still end up being the driest November, December, January period in more than 35 years of record by a pretty wide margin. That should give you a pretty clear indication of how dry it is there. And even though there is some rain coming up in 1 to 2 weeks from now, it's not going to be anywhere near enough to make up for these deficits. And until we get there, Todd, it's going to be hot. High temperatures around 100 and low temperatures around 75 to 82 degrees every day until next Thursday or Friday. So the situation is still going to be getting worse in those locations before they get better. And again, it's the same kind of story, Todd. Once we get these rains, what will it matter for the soybean crop? We already know the first crop corn had some problems, but maybe this will be a bigger story for second crop corn, because regardless of what's happened to this point in the growing season, if it turns wetter at the end of the month, and especially over the first half of February, then we'll start being able to plant some of that second crop corn in Paraná and points to the north. So that story is still one that is very much able to have a recovery, the second crop corn. But for first crop corn and soybeans, we know there's problems there. It's just a matter of what exactly has happened.
In the center west, Mato Grosso, how are conditions?
Well, they've been very wet. I think we talked about this last week and even in prior weeks. But while we've been talking about record dryness in the south, there's been record wetness in the central and northern soybean areas. And it's quite amazing to even think about this, but in Mato Grosso, which is the number one soybean state in Brazil and makes that a key producer for the entire world, from November through December, they were the wettest in more than 42 years of record. And that's a tough record to beat, Todd, because they've had some wet ones in the past. But basically, the state level had more than 24 inches of rain over that two-month period. It stayed pretty wet over the first 7 to 10 days of January, but since then it's been drying out a lot. So the last 7 days or so has been pretty dry, and we don't look for a whole lot of rain over the next 5 to 7 days. Once we get beyond that, it will start turning wetter again, but we don't think we're going to be moving into this unusually wet setup like we had earlier. But nonetheless, it could probably stay dry there for a while to help out with the soybean harvest.
Hey, thank you so much.
Yep, great talking with you.
That's Mike Tenura with T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Find him online at tstorm.net. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media.